Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Jill Ajizi. Welcome to Family Matters. We're back again, and I'm so glad to be back on the air. We've taken a little hiatus, and Judge Michelle and I needed that rest. So I am so glad that we could be back with you tonight, the night before one of the biggest days that we work towards in the parental alienation arena, and that is Parental Alienation Awareness Day, is April 25th. And it is the same day every year, and we've been having an event every April 25th called the Bubbles of Love event, and that is happening worldwide. There are many, many different events going on. So for an event in your area, if you're listening and you don't know where to go, go to the website www.paaousa.org and you can find an event near you. I hope. We hope to have more and more events each year, and it's grown by leaps and bounds in the time that I've been involved with this event. It's just a fun event, a lot of bubble blowing going on, a lot of kids involved. Dallas has a great event. San Diego has a great event. Florida, Illinois. So anywhere you are, there's probably something pretty close to you. But the good thing about this event, for all of you that are listening and any of you that are in the media, this is a big media attention getter. Who doesn't love little kids blowing bubbles, standing in the middle of a beautiful park-like setting with face painters and pandas walking around, not live pandas, but panda people in panda suits? It is just a really great visual. So watch your news media tomorrow night and your newspapers the next day and see if you can see just a little bit about Bubbles of Love, because it is a really, really fun day for people. But the main thing about it is it's a media attention getter, and guess what that does? It raises awareness, and it educates the public and professionals that are watching about our issues, and that is parental alienation. Simply put, for those of you who are new in listening, simply put, is when one parent turns the children against the other parent, usually an adversarial divorce. It can happen in other settings, but usually an adversarial divorce. So if you know someone that that's happening to, you know, tune into these shows and listen. Listen and pay attention to what's going on around you, because it is an exciting movement that is we're all moving forward. We are taking giant steps. Tonight, Judge LaRance is sadly at a visitation, and we have a great co-host tonight in someone that I have come to know through parental alienation and through the Family Law Study Committee that I served on here in Illinois, and that is Attorney Mick Gerhart. Hi, Mick. How are you?
Fine, and thank you for inviting me on the show. I'm not sure if how I came to know you. I think, if I remember, you sort of dragged me into this.
Did I drag you? I don't think.
Okay, you sort of like lured me into it. Next thing I knew, I was overcome with it.
That's right, that's right. But now you're on the show in Chicago, which is so great. And it's a television show, right?
What's that? Sorry, I lost part of you.
How is it a radio show, Mick, in Chicago?
Yes. Well, actually, it's a cable TV show that we started doing every Friday where we talk about the family courts. And it includes parental alienation, obviously. Lots of our callers call in and discuss that.
Right. And you know, that's something a lot of people don't know that's available to a lot of the advocates. And I try to always tell people, and our guest today should be doing this, and I'm going to stress that to her again after she hears me preach about it right now. But you can go to your cable station. You can go to your local access channel, and you can have your own show. Most always, they are free. Ours are not anymore. They're $150 a segment, but I'm still doing them, and I still love doing them. So if in your area you can locate your Comcast provider or your public access provider, you can do a show as well. And it's really informative. I cannot tell you, and Mick, you'll have this happen. I go to the grocery store, and people stop me. I saw your show last night. I have a brother who's going through this, you know, and so it's interesting that people do watch it. And really, they might not watch the whole 30 minutes, but they get, you know, some information about what's going on. So that's interesting. I want you to fill us in a little bit, because I know you have your finger on the pulse of legislation here in Illinois. And for all the things that we do wrong in Illinois politically and the really bad rap that we have economically, we are doing family law a little bit right. And so tell me right now, what's on the burner for legislation that has to do with family law?
Oh, yeah, and I'm not the only one. There's lots of people that help behind the scenes on this, and I know tomorrow we've got some more meetings. Presently, we have in legislation, or I'll say the stuff that has advanced so far, is we've got the right of first refusal. And the right of first refusal is when one parent can't take care of the child, that they have to offer the child up to the other parent before they hire a babysitter. Because we're seeing specific, especially alienation-type cases, we're seeing parents, instead of offering, obviously they're not going to offer the child to the other parent, but what they're doing is hiring babysitters and having everybody else do it. So what this piece of legislation is doing is giving the courts an opportunity to state that it would be in the children's best interest to have the other parent watch a child. Now that one, we've made it through the House side, unanimously, and now it's on the Senate side. And on the Senate side, we've already got one sponsor. We're starting to look for other sponsors. And like I said, I'm far from the only person working on this. There are several others who are making all kinds of phone calls. I know, I think tomorrow, Richard Thomas and Jim Weddington are meeting with a few senators also to see if we can get them to sign on as co-sponsors. So we're hoping that this will help alleviate some of the alienation problems. If a parent doesn't have a choice, but if it's in legislation, the chances are more likely that the judges are going to, put it in a parenting agreement. That the other live one we have that's a little bit behind is a House resolution by Jill Tracy, naming April as Parental Alienation Awareness Month. We're a little bit behind on that because our legislators discussing stuff like guns, casinos, pension reform, and stuff like that. And I know they're not in session this week to vote on it, so there's a chance they'll be voting on it next Friday. So it'll be, Parental Alienation Month will be April in 2013. However, it won't be signed or voted on until after April.
That's okay. We had a proclaim last year, and, as far as I'm concerned, Jill sure. Tracy did all of that legwork last year, and it's a carryover. So I'm good.
Well, I agree.
I'm good with that. And I think we should point out that Pennsylvania also has the month of April proclaimed as Parental Alienation Awareness Day. So those two states are, in the forefront of carrying child issues really strongly and forwardly. I want to tell you a little bit about, and you may know about this, Brian McLaughlin, who's an actor, a friend of mine, was abducted by his father when he was 3 years old. He's been on the show. It's a great story. His book, Have You Seen My Mother, is an amazing, amazing book if you haven't read it. And he has he is in Washington State, and he was really instrumental in getting Washington House Bill 1021 passed the House and Senate. It's waiting for the governor to sign, and what it does is basically says that every parent in Washington State going through divorce will be taught through the mandatory parenting classes that abducting their child is child abuse. I called the sponsor of that bill, Representative Larry Haler, the other day and talked to him for a long time. He and I had a great conversation, and he is actually from Illinois, but has had experience with this. And he said, I will do anything I can to help you and anything I can do to help children. This is so important, Mick, that legislators are now picking up this cause and recognizing that there is something wrong in family courts, in the legislative part of it, and in laws not being enforced. And it's important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm seeing lots of other states, like you mentioned, Pennsylvania for Parental Alienation Awareness Month. I know Representative Mert, I've talked to him on that, and I see bills being introduced there, Northeast. And I think tomorrow there's one that's been passed the House and the Senate in Florida that actually had to do with maintenance, and some legislators slipped in there that there's going to be a presumption of shared parenting. And we're waiting for the governor's signature on that tomorrow. I think tomorrow's the last day. I know I sent an email to the governor earlier today, like everybody else, pushing him to make sure he signs that bill. So that's the presumption of shared parenting. I know lots of others have contacted them.
Mick, how important is it to contact your legislators when issues like this that affect you are going on? How important can you tell people that is?
Well, extremely important. I've discovered that legislators are, at least the ones I've dealt with, and I think I've pretty much nagged everyone in Illinois. They're very nag is an understood statement. I'm surprised at how approachable they are.
Right.
I mean, they're very good about returning phone calls. They're not that hard to get hold of, and once you talk to them, you realize they're your neighbors or they're just everyday people. And when I start talking about parental alienation, I'm always amazed at how quick they sit there and go, "That's exactly what's happening to my brother, my cousin, my somebody."
Mm-hmm. Right.
And all of a sudden, they understand that it's really a pretty big issue. It's not just their cousin,
just
their brother,
them.
Or whoever.
Not just them, right. Well, and what you say about them being just people, I mean, I grew up with a legislator. My dad was a state legislator for 16 years and a congressman. They're just regular people. They're elected by you. It's your job, if you have an issue, to contact them because they can't act on it if they don't hear what you're thinking and what you need. So call them. They put their pants on one leg at a time, just like you and I do, and they welcome your calls. So please, please, please make that call if you feel that any of these things affect you. I want to get to our guest, Mick. I'm so excited to have Jennifer Verinold here tonight. She is a former media executive who is dedicated to the advocacy of each child's right to have an active and loving relationship with both parents following a separation or divorce. Jennifer, and this is an understatement, she has organized a group of Connecticut families affected by parental alienation along with local legislators to change the way in which family court identifies this form of child abuse. And this is, parental alienation is child abuse. She has worked with the Connecticut Judicial Committee currently to amend current laws and introduce new language that will provide family court judges the ability to act swiftly. Again, important. A judge has to make a decision swiftly in a parental alienation case or it's a downhill slide for the child and for the target parent and his or her family. Jennifer is also a certified guardian ad litem from the state of Connecticut and has been instrumental along with her fiancé, Jerry Mastrangelo, who is an alienated father of triplets, in having the Connecticut Judicial Committee vote unanimously to form a task force in order to investigate how these cases are being handled in family courts across Connecticut. This task force is going to present solutions to the Committee for Early Detection and Prevention of Alienation, and if it's not caught early, provide treatment that is necessary for the alienated child and the affected family. That's exciting. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you, Jill, and thank you, Mick. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
I'm so glad you're here. And, of course, Jerry, your fiancé, has been on the show before talking about his case. But since that time, it's as if you guys decided you were just going to take the Connecticut family court system by storm, and you really have. Tell
yes.
me about what's happened. I mean, let's just go back a little bit. Now, do you want to give the backstory with Jerry's case, just a synopsis, and then let's talk about when you got Senator Fasano involved and everything that's happened since then. So give me the backstory on Jerry.
Sure. Jerry is my fiancé. He's a great man. He has triplets. They're 13. And he has been battling alienation since 2005, basically, since the separation. And I met him in 2006 and kind of watched.
Uh-oh. You guys there?
I'm still here.
Uh-oh. She's on Skype, and she dropped, so she'll call right back. We'll pick her up. I'm going to grab this call right here really quick. Hi, caller. How are you? Hi, 203 area code. What's your name? Oh, somebody's just listening. Okay, somebody's just listening. We'll wait until Jennifer calls back. She's on Skype, so sometimes Skype is a little weird. So we'll just wait a second until she calls back, but it's a great story, so we'll listen to that in a second. Mick, are you blowing bubbles tomorrow?
Yes, I will be. In fact, I've got my bubble machine here that I was My daughter made me buy the other day, and I have court tomorrow, so I'm bringing it with me. I'm just hoping there's not a security checkpoint that's going to prevent me from bringing bubbles into the courtroom while I go to my court cases.
Yep, probably you're not going to be able to bring the liquid in. Oh, hey, here she is. Hang on, let me grab her.
Okay.
Hey, Jennifer, it's okay.
I don't know what it was. That me or you or?
I think your Skype just, you know, pooped out, but that's all right. So,
okay.
So, go ahead. Finish off where
so where
were.
Where was I don't know where I got disconnected. But I think I said that Jerry and I started dating in 2006, and
yes.
And I kind of sat in the background watching how this whole thing unfolded, and was very, very frustrated in all the professionals involved, and I realized just how uneducated people were and these professionals were regarding alienation. So we did a lot of research. We reached out to a lot of great people like yourself and got educated and tried to do our best to educate others. We set up a Facebook page, a website. We did have billboards throughout the state of Connecticut. And because of my background in media, I was fortunate enough to have a lot of connections with those who knew me well and realized that this was really a topic that needed some exposure. And then it actually morphed into what really is going on in family court in Connecticut. And I don't want to say the word corruption. I think that's just too harsh. But I think that the system is definitely broken, as Jerry has said in many interviews, that it's just a broken system. And I think that those that are at the head of it really need some education on what's really going on. And so that's our goal at this point with the folks that have been so kind as to reach out to us and show their support. And they actually call Jerry their hero because I know you, Jill, you've gone through a very expensive ordeal with your case, and as well as a lot of many others. But, you know, you realize you get to a point and, you know, you have to decide, okay, well, do I spend another $250,000 or $500,000 to try to beat a system that you're not going to be able to win because it's just broken? You know, people have walked away because they're financially and emotionally bankrupt. And Jerry got to the point where he ended up getting to that. They, you know, so we're trying to make some changes. So I appreciate it.
Good. I'm glad that you guys are there and you are the foot soldiers on the ground of Connecticut. But one thing I want to point out that you said is it is not necessarily a corrupt system. While there are, you know, every now and again you will see judges that have become very corrupt or are taking payments under the table. I can think of one in Texas that was convicted. But it is a broken system. And I think what is happening is there is no education for these judges to understand what to do. And in Illinois, thank God, we had the Supreme Court appoint Judge Michelle, to teach the family court judges here on parental alienation and visitation interference. It just takes a little education, and then they can understand what the remedies are and what is available to them to use as a toolbox to circumvent these children being lost and having a relationship that is completely, and I love this term I saw the other day in a great book by a German doctor, emotionally amputated from a parent. I think that is so, it gives me chills even when I say it. It is so incredibly correct. And this book by Wilfred von Gohau, and I wrote to him the other day. He sent me the book, and it's just an incredible book with all of these great interviews of adult alienated children that talk about the devastating effects. One of them, 59 years old, and she still is suffering the effects of parental alienation. You know, when these judges understand that they have the power in their hands to change the course of the life of a child, or in Jerry's case, triplets, it's really powerful. And I think, you know, that sort of works in the favor of, I mean, judges have egos, and we all have egos, but I think when you're a judge or a legislator, you have a little bigger ego than most, and it sort of is a feather in their cap to say, you know, I saved the soul of a child today.
Right.
So
very powerful.
I think that's important that you say, you know, it's not corrupt, but
right.
it is broken. How do you, I want to ask you, how do you deal with this, or how did you deal with this in your everyday work as a GAL
when you were
working in the court system?
Okay, let me say this, because I actually, and I don't think I shared this with you, but as a result of seeing what was not happening in Jerry's case, the state of Connecticut, and I give a lot of credit to Judge Linda Monroe, who's actually, she is over the family court judicial system, and she set up, along with some of her colleagues, a certification for guardian ad litem and attorneys for the minor children. And it's a 6-week course. It's 30 hours, and at the end you get certified, and you are able to work in that field. I have never gone ahead and pursued that. And the reason I took the course is because I wanted to find out what is the role of a guardian ad litem and an attorney for the minor children. And I am so disappointed with what is going on, and I feel that the roadblock is with the guardian ad litem in the state of Connecticut for parents, between the parents and the children, because most of these guardian ad litems, like the one Jerry had, all they do is take notes, talk to one another, take notes, and they charge you what they would be charging if you were a client and they were in the role of an attorney for $300 an hour. And in the state of Connecticut, the role of a guardian ad litem is to investigate and report back to the court their findings, their factual findings, so that the court can make the best decision. Unfortunately, that's not happening in Connecticut. And a lot of parents that are alienated, or there's interference with visitation or parenting time, they are just, they don't know where to turn. And so that's one of the things that this task force is going to take a look at. What is going on? There's no oversight. And I don't know when this surge came about where all these, I think really what it is once a lot of people started going pro se, these attorneys said, wow, what am I going to do? There's not enough clients to go around. So in family court, what they decided to do was to get certified and be a guardian ad litem for the same fee that they get for an attorney. And I don't know, Mick, if Mick can contribute to that, but it's very, very frustrating.
Oh, no, when you started saying that, I was sort of like nodding my head and ready to speak. Because, no, you're absolutely right. And here in Illinois, I know most states, guardian ad litems are, you know, people who are other than lawyers lots of times. In Illinois, our statute actually states that you have to be an attorney to be a guardian ad litem. So my issue with our guardian ad litems here are, they don't have the proper training. Just because they have a law license, that doesn't mean they know anything about what's going on with the children. And as an attorney, it is probably the world's best job. And I think you sort of hit on some reasons why it's going to be a world's best job, is the work that's required of them is, I won't say minimal, but it really is. There's no accountability. And I'm not sure if it's the same in Connecticut, but I've spoken to people in other states, there seems to be minimal accountability for them. They just give their opinion. They put their billing out there. They know they have absolute immunity, so I won't say there's an incentive not to do their job, but when you have immunity and no accountability, you can understand why you don't get the best results either.
Right, exactly. They do have immunity here in Connecticut. There's no oversight, and that's what I testified in front of the Judicial Committee on April 5th, and I was very pleased with the legislators paying attention, asking me questions, and commenting. One legislator said, you know something, I think I need to make sure that we all go and visit family courts throughout Connecticut so that we can see what's really going on.
Thank God.
And he said, he was instrumental in bringing Guardian Ad Litem, you know, the whole program into Connecticut. And he said it is not the same program that he had initiated into Connecticut years ago, and he wants to investigate it. So it's very upsetting, and parents can't. They cannot go to a judge because that's what they say. Well, you go to the judge, and I don't know. It's very seldom that a judge will say, unless it's grossly obvious that the guardian ad litem has a conflict of interest or something, to get them removed from a case.
Jennifer, for people, and both of you can comment on this, I mean, it's a pretty pat answer, but for those of you who are listening who may not know what we're talking about, I mean, there may be people who are just entering divorce venue that don't even know what GAL or guardian ad litem means. So, Jennifer, why don't you just give us a definition?
In the state of Connecticut, the statute describes a guardian ad litem as someone who is appointed by the court to investigate and report back to the court as to the best interest of the children. So when there is a dispute with custody and children are involved in any kind of divorce proceedings, or one of the parents wants to move out of state, they appoint a guardian ad litem. And again, their role is to investigate and report back to the court. So the mere fact of needing to be an attorney to do this is I don't know why the state of Illinois would say that, because you don't need a law license to investigate and get the facts. You just need to be a reporter, basically, an investigator. So that's they could be a mental health professional, they could be a layperson like myself, or they could be an attorney. And one thing that I think about with people going through divorce, you know, if there's children involved and a guardian ad litem is brought up, if there isn't any abuse by either parent, and I'm talking about physical, sexual abuse, I don't know why. I had a judge say to me the other day who just retired, and she worked in probate court and juvenile court. She said to me, she goes, you know, I don't even know why a guardian ad litem would be appointed in family court, because unless there's abuse, and in our case, the only abuse there is the alienating parent abusing, psychologically abusing. Then she also said, when it comes to an attorney for the minor children, she said, from what she's known for 20 years on the bench in juvenile court in Connecticut, that what happens is if the guardian ad litem, after she does her investigating, realizes that the best interest of the children is not the same as their wishes, that's when she goes to the judge and says, you know what, the children need to have an attorney for the minor children. The children need an attorney because we have a difference of opinion of what their best interest is. And in this case, in Jerry's case, which was very sad, the other side wanted to use that as a stall tactic. And it's just really sad. And then you're talking about, you know, $40,000 later. It's just really very sad.
And I'm going to say it sort of becomes a stall tactic. I personally fight against guardian ad litems entering a case, because when you have parental alienation, I think you mentioned earlier, something that you have to address right away, and I think your judiciary committee is discussing that also. Because once you add one in, then all of a sudden the court says, well, okay, I'm going to give, you know, we'll come back in, you know, 3-4 months while the guardian ad litem investigates, and by that time, you know, the alienation just gets more and more, or you know, more ingrained, and it just delays the courts from
time is the friend of the alienator. Time is the best friend of the alienator.
And
you guys, I'm gonna grab a call really quick. Hang on just a second.
Okay.
Hi, caller. Welcome. What's your name?
My name is Dave.
Hi, Dave. You have a question for Jennifer?
I do. I've probably court watched over 1,000 cases. And my question to her is, you know, have you seen the appearance of how some of these guardian litems and child reps actually initiate the alienation? Not that they would do it, believe me, But, I mean, I think it's so ingrained in some of them. They've been doing it for 30-plus years. They don't even realize it.
Are you referring to how they enable the alienation?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, I think in a lot of cases, just like speaking to a legislator, they don't know what alienation is. A lot of these guardian ad litem, even though the training addresses it in the state of Connecticut, they, if they're easily manipulated by the alienator, which we all know what the personality is of an alienator, they're master manipulators. If they're able to be manipulated, then they're enabling the alienation because they're going to side with the parent that is most likely the alienator because they have a lot of charm and they say everything and smile a lot and things like that. So, yes, I do agree that they can do that. But with education, as we talked about, I really believe that it can be turned around. But it's a big job.
Jennifer,
Dave,
hang on a second. Wouldn't you agree as well, though, that there are parents who I mean, we all have alienating tendencies. Let's not kid ourselves. But there are parents who come into the divorce arena who have maybe an inkling in the back of their mind how to do this or have thought about it a little bit or maybe don't know about it at all. But they get into that cottage industry that's been created by the GALs and the lawyers and the judges, and then they get the idea, and then they're fed the ideas by the system. Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And it's all about, and this goes back to what Mick said about Illinois having guardian ad litem mandating that they have to be attorneys. I strongly believe that I think it should be anyone but an attorney, because look at what an attorney represents. They're conflict. They make their living on conflict. And I think it's very difficult to go into one courtroom at 9:30 and you represent a child and you're trying to settle, you're trying to be nice, you're trying to help out, and then you put a different face on in the other courtroom. I just don't see how it's possible. And I think that they contribute to it. So yes, they do contribute to the alienation, and they empower the children. The more people, professionals, get involved and make house trips out to the kids' house, talk to the kids, let me hear how you feel. The worst thing you can ask a child is, why don't you want to be with your dad? Why do you not like your dad or your mother? I just feel like, gosh, that's so heavy for a child.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Don't you think that harbors on abuse, too, when they do that? I mean, I've court-watched the same child rep. I went from courtroom to courtroom to courtroom watching this guy, and it sickens my heart that there's so many of these children that are getting abused indirectly by these child reps and guardian ad litem with the tactics that they use. And the tactics they use, I can see it, but the one guy I talked to, he owes his child rep over $80,000, and nothing's been changed. And the guardian ad litem told him that you'll never see your kids again.
Dave, you're in Illinois, right?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you look up Mick Gerhart? And, I mean, maybe you know Mick. If you're a court watcher, you may know Mick because he's so involved. But why don't we get this guy's name and let's do a little campaign on him?
Not a problem. I'm going to the Illinois Supreme Court against the guy anyway. So.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Right.
We appreciate
thanks.
It.
I appreciate it. And, we need some of this stuff in Illinois, and whatever help you need, I'll get a hold of Mick and do it. Bye.
Great. Blow bubbles tomorrow. Yeah. Thanks. I'm going to grab another call, you guys. Go ahead, Mick. What?
Oh, I was going to say, another issue where the delay that the GALs cause, I see very often what a GAL does is, they hear, like Jennifer's saying, they talk to the kids, and the kids say they hate the parent. And then now the GAL is sort of afraid of the other parent, so they start siding with the alienator side. They say, oh, the kids are afraid of you, so I don't want to put the kids with you, or I don't want to help assist in providing for time for that alienating parent and the child. And once again, this makes the situation worse. Now they see the child even less.
Mick, where is the legislation, the GAL bill that included the words parental alienation training? Where's that right now?
Okay, that right now is it's sitting out there. We passed the time, everything passed the deadline, so it went
mm-hmm.
back to the Rules Committee.
Yeah.
So we've probably got, I think, about 10 to 12 bills right now that are sitting back in the Rules Committee, so we have to start nagging those legislators to get it back in front of the Judiciary Committee to move forward. But, yeah, that would be a very big plus if we can get specifically the words parental alienation as part of GAL training, and that's what this bill is trying to do. And I believe that one's spearheaded by the Children's Rights Council, if I remember correctly.
Great. Okay, I'm going to grab this call. Hi, Robert Ferrer from Champaign. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi,
hey,
Robert.
Hey, speak up a little bit, buddy, okay?
How am I echoing?
Well, you're just really soft, and that's just not like you.
Oh, okay. <I'll use
that. laughs> Do you have a question for Jennifer, Robert?
Yeah, I don't know why are we... Jennifer, has it been thought that perhaps we need to bypass the guardian ad litem, and we need to bypass these legalese type of interventions and go right into therapy? I mean, the research seems to be indicating that the only type of intervention that works is one that involves the entire family, as espoused by Linda Gottlieb,
mm-hmm.
as espoused by a current bill that's in Illinois to allow judges to require integrated family therapy, which is much more comprehensive in its approach, and not just dealing with individuals. You got to deal with the entire family. Couldn't judges be trained to at least get a sense that some alienating behaviors are involved, and then just send it right to these kinds of groups to do full assessment and then get into intervention right away, as opposed to wasting the time, the months, maybe even a year or so to get through all these reports from child custody evaluators, from guardian ad litems and so forth. It seems to be that it's wasting time, and time is what, you know, as Mick said, is not what these children have.
Right, and one thing, and I do agree that we don't need to have all these layers when it comes to custody disputes. We don't need to have, again, absent of child abuse, other than the alienation abuse. Why do we need to have guardian ad litems? I could see them in criminal or juvenile probate, but I don't understand why we need to have some stranger, another stranger, inflict his or her values onto
biases.
A family.
Exactly.
And our values are very high. Let me just give you a quick example. Jerry's son was texting his mother, referring to his father as an F-face and an a-hole and all these things, and it came out. And we saw the text, and Jerry was heartbroken. And when he spoke to the guardian ad litem, she says, oh, she didn't want him to see this. But she says all kids talk like that. Now, what kind of values does this guardian ad litem have when she says something like that? You know, that's just one small example. But getting back to the therapy, I do agree, and I think Linda Gottlieb is amazing. And I wish she was in Connecticut, because I think Jerry and his
She's
children...
She's close
and,
enough.
Right. And they may be able to do something. But
yeah.
Ironically, I think when you look at an alienating family, you know, the whole dynamics, typically the alienator is the only one who hasn't had any therapy. You know,
mm-hmm.
like look in our case with Jerry, he has had a lot of therapy, and his children have had over 150 sessions with a therapist who, quite frankly, has done damage and
made it worse.
And
yeah,
and then
therapy doesn't work.
Right, and cognitive therapy is not the answer. It has to be someone who understands parental alienation and knows how to reunification. I do believe in that.
Robert, you know, I just want to say to you, I know you love integrative therapy, and this bill is terrific, but as Jennifer says, how are you ever going to get, if a judge orders integrative family therapy, you could never get an alienator like Jerry's ex-wife or anyone that I know well, which I will not say any names, to go to integrative family therapy. How? I mean, I know that Mick's ex-wife wouldn't do it. So how do you, I mean, you can tout it all day long, but it's like these bills that are out there floating around and this legislation that nobody enforces and uses. So what's the point?
The point is that if the court is true to ensuring that its orders are respected, because we're dealing with something much greater than that, and if the Riot Act is read to the alienator saying that if you keep this up, if you don't participate in this kind of intervention, you're going to lose custody. End of story.
But, Robert, I mean, if we look at Jennifer Watkins, let's look at the Watkins bill, visitation interference bill, girl, allegedly the grandmother shoots the guy in the back when he comes to pick up the little girl, his parents fight, they get this visitation law, interference law passed. The judge has issued how many contempt charges against this woman? She took the little girl, went to Florida. Now a warrant has been issued for her arrest. It's been 3 years.
I know it's slow, but we're dealing with just one aspect of it. I'm looking at it from a total experience where the first sign that the judge, who's trained well enough, senses that they're alienating behaviors, gets it out of the court and demands that these people participate in a therapeutic intervention as a family, which I think is the only type of intervention that works, is where all family members are involved together.
But I think you have to add, Robert, some incentive for this person who is the sick person in the triangulation to participate. So you've got to add some because money talks with these people. You've got to add some monetary, contempt that's going to be placed on them per day, or turn it into a tort case, so that
it's
personal
not,
interest.
It's just why don't you question their fitness as a parent, and say that your fitness as a parent is at risk or is being questioned if you're not going to do what it takes to secure the psychological well-being of the child.
Yeah.
And that requires the courts recognizing that PAS is child abuse.
I've seen a few judges who actually have the fortitude to tell the other parent, hey, I will change custody if you don't start playing ball. But I see very, very few judges I see that. It's more often I've got a case right now where I actually have a contempt order against the alienating parent, and it to held them in contempt and says, you are an alienator. However, I'm not going to force the children to see you because they hate you. But they found the mother, in this case, an alienator. And it's like, okay, judge, how do we expect to solve this case if you're not going to step up and say, you're willing to step up and call her an alienator, but you're not willing to force visitation or change custody or anything else. So this case is continuing, and it's going to be the same thing over and over.
I understand, and maybe because we the legislation has not defined emotional psychological abuse of a child. And no court will allow a child to be with a parent who physically abuses the child, correct?
Mm-mm.
So
yeah.
Why would a court allow a child to be with a parent who emotionally abuses the child? That's the key thing there, and we need to focus on the through legislation that PAS type behaviors is a form of child abuse.
Well, when I was in the GAL training, Judge Linda Monroe, she stood up in front of everyone and said, "Parental alienation is a form of child neglect," and I think they recognize it. I think it's just very hard to prove. And then you have to spend money. thousands of dollars to have experts come into court and educate the court and things like that, or go through the process. And it's a lot of parents can't even afford that. So
I understand. That's why I would bypass all that and send them right into an appropriate type of family therapy,
mm-hmm.
that as part of this process is assessment. And people who are familiar with PASS knows how to distinguish it from other things.
I think a lot of them, too, though, are afraid. A lot of the judges are afraid, too, because so many lawyers use the defense that, well, this child's going to run away, or this child is threatened to commit mm-hmm. suicide. They're afraid to have the blood of that child on their hands. But if they would just act swiftly, they would see so many outcomes. And you know what? It would free up their docket. I mean, they wouldn't
right.
have these cases in their
exactly.
courtroom for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, some of these cases go on, you know, it just forever. And it's crazy
exactly.
to have these
exactly.
kids living out their childhood, you know, in the courtroom.
And no disrespect, Mick, but these attorneys, they're the ones that are making all the money at the expense of the children and the parents. And it's very, very sad what's going on.
So you're absolutely correct. But I have a question for you, because I've seen the GAL training. We have regular GAL training here. And I know we've tried in the past to get parental alienation as part of the training, and that's been extremely difficult here in Cook County. But what type of GAL training or parental alienation GAL training that they have in Connecticut?
Well, they cited a couple of peer reviews that journals, and they had some speakers that were amazing psychologists on the subject. You wouldn't call them the experts like an Amy Baker or a Linda Gottlieb, but they definitely knew about it, and they did speak about it. Did they spend a whole day on it? No, they didn't, but I think that's what they need to do. And Professor Carolyn Haas, who is also part of the program, she was actually in court for our case, and I overheard her talking to someone about expanding that part of their training with parental alienation. So I was very, very happy to hear that. So, you know, maybe we can get to, I can give you the, I mean, I could give you her information, and maybe she could be helpful in your state with the GAL training.
But I think, Jennifer, you should be in there doing the GAL training for this.
You know, I got to tell you that all the people that are part of the training, they're all part of the problem, unfortunately. You know, we've got, a lot of these people, I look at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're part of Jerry's problem. They're part of everyone's problem. I mean, we have a guy that just did another evaluation for $3,000 to see if the children were resilient enough to do reunification therapy, and he referred this family to a therapist that's an hour away. And has never treated alienation, and quite frankly, she didn't even know what it was. So it's really a problem in Connecticut, and I think it's a problem everywhere. So
Jennifer, where are you right now? Where are you and Jerry right now with the triplets? What's going on?
Well, he has not seen the children. He hasn't seen his one son, although he does talk to him as much as, you know, maybe every other day or maybe daily, depends on what's going on in their lives. But he hasn't seen him since, he hasn't seen his one son, Christopher, since September 4th, 2012. And Jill, let me tell you this. I know you've spoken to Jerry. He
mm-hmm.
is an amazing person. And a father, let me tell you something. When that phone rings and it says Christopher M on it, or Carly, or Anthony, he jumps. I mean, he's got to get that phone. And it's so sad that a father, and I know there's hundreds of thousands of parents out there, moms and dads, that do the same thing. He misses his kids so much, and it's so heartbreaking to watch. Because if I were a child, he's the one who would want as my dad. And it's just really, really sad. And right now, I know when he spoke to his one son and he found out that they were resilient for a second go-around of reunification. The first go-around didn't work because their mom couldn't get them to the appointments. And that was shortly thereafter. Shortly before that happened, the therapist said he didn't know how she flew under the radar for so long. So, of course, she didn't like that. And then, of course, no more therapy for
right.
the kids. And that was 2011. And then they did, speaking to Robert, there was a co-parenting therapy that was a motion that Jerry filed. And that was ordered. And the mom didn't think that was worth it. And so she stopped. And when a GAL is involved, you know, they in our state, they have one motion that they can file. And the motion is, for advice from the court when court orders are not being followed or things are going on that are affecting the child. And our guardian ad litem had three or four opportunities to do that, and she never did it. And that's where, if you back it up to when this all started, she had the opportunity to make a difference, but she received $50,000 over this period of time and couldn't file three motions other than for money. So so that's that. But getting back to the kids, he doesn't see his children, and it's very sad. Very sad.
Yeah, and he's lucky that he has you, because, you know, I talk to so many people every week that are in a relationship, and the other person doesn't understand this whole dynamic. I'm lucky to have a spouse who does. He's lucky to have you. And it's very difficult on a relationship to have this sort of in the middle of it all. Not seeing your kids is a difficult thing. And I don't think people understand that it is like the death of a child, but with mm-hmm. no grieving, with no ability to have closure.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, parental alienation has many different levels, three different levels. And there is, you know, parents who still have contact but are alienated. There are parents who have minimal contact that are alienated. And there are people like me who have no contact. So it's a horrible, horrible thing. But I think as I've worked, and I think Mick, you would agree, and you too, Jennifer, the time that you've been in this arena working, there is a change being made.
Yes.
And I think we can safely say, and it may not be in our lifetime, but that mm-hmm. this will be eradicated for about 80% of the kids. The other 20% are still going to have alienators that are hell-bent on destroying the other partner and using the children to do it. But I think we're making a lot of headway, and I'm proud of the work that is done by the very strong advocates that we have in PAO USA, people like you, Jennifer, working in Connecticut with billboards and rallies and talking to legislators, and Mick, you in Chicago doing what you're doing and coming down here and working with legislators. It's so, so important that if you know someone who's being alienated or if you're experiencing this, that you be a very strong advocate, because nobody's going to do it if you don't.
Right.
And you've got to speak out. How important do you think it is, Jennifer, the work that you've done so far in Connecticut, the change that you're making? How impactful is that?
I believe that we open the eyes of many legislators, because like Len Fasano said, and I thank him every day for what he has been able to do for us in this in our effort and the cause for many families and parents. They don't know what they don't know. They don't know. They live in the suburbs. They have their family. They're not divorced. They never stepped into family court. They don't know. And so I got to believe that once they realize what's going on, they're going to be like, wow, this is horrible. I can't even imagine my child telling me I'm an idiot or hanging up in my face or walking by me like they don't know me. These are behaviors that teaching a child to hate is really going to be something in our future that is going to cause so much pain for so many people in our society, mm-hmm. and they really need to get a hold of this, because once children are not, and I'm not a psychologist, but we're not born to hate. We're taught mm-hmm. to hate. And for a child to hate a parent, even though we know down deep inside they don't, but to display those characteristics of someone who does hate a parent or someone, it's so bad. And it's bad for our health.
If you're teaching children to throw away one of the most important relationships in their life,
mm-hmm.
what does that teach them about other relationships that they might have? You know, we know that this is long-lasting. We know it's devastating to these children. 48% of them never want to marry. They have self-esteem. They have trust issues. They have inability to have relationships. And then all of the other, I just met with someone the other day who has a not-for-profit here in Springfield, Illinois, about the health, the physical health of children. I said, where's the mental health in this? We need mm-hmm. to add a mental health aspect to this physical, good eating, good cooking. Mm-hmm. Michelle Obama, if you are listening, you know, I've talked to you about this. We need to make these kids understand that they can love both their parents, and that through divorce, that having two parents in your lives and your grandparents and knowing your heritage and knowing your medical history is so very important. So we need to consider all of this, because Jennifer's so right, and Mick, I think you'd agree. We're looking at an entire group of adults in you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years that are going to be running our country, and they're not going to be able to make a decision because they've been forced to choose as children, and they can't make those decisions as adults.
Right.
And I try to point that out to legislators and local politicians, you know, especially when I hear complaints about society and whatever. I try to link that, hey, with the alienation, you're creating that type of society too, instead of, you know, you have to attack it very early on in these divorce cases and start, you know, solving the problems there and not trying to solve it many years later.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing the results of, I'll call it part of the social experiment.
Well, Jennifer, what do you have going on tomorrow in Connecticut? Anything at all?
Well, we have a candlelight vigil up at the Capitol. A great friend of ours, Ken, who has an organization called SaveOurKids.com.
Right.
He's just been amazing, and this is, I believe, his fifth year. So we'll be up there from 6 to 9, and we're looking forward to it. We want to spread the word, and we've got our billboards up, and I'll be doing
good.
Some radio interviews, and we've got a TV show that I'll be doing on Fox 61 up here in Connecticut, and we gotta just spread the word.
You got a lot going on, and so
yes.
they can go. I know they can go to our. I know it's on our website at paousa.org. Where else can they get information about this?
On Facebook, it's Pain CT, so it's PAINCT, so Parental Alienation in Connecticut, and also we have a website, painct.com.
Okay, terrific. Thank you for being our guest tonight. Mick, I want to how can people get a hold of you if they want to be involved in the legislative process in Illinois?
Oh, I was about to say, there's lots of different groups they can get in Illinois if they contact either Illinois Fathers or Children's Rights Council.
Right.
Odds are at some point it will come across my desk. just because I work. They seem to be the most legislatively active groups, and I work with both of them. And I'll give you my phone number here. My office is 312-334-9021.
Uh-huh.
And anybody who wants to call a legislator, and it's so simple to call it, you become addicted after a while. You enjoy calling legislators. Anyone who wants to call a legislator, let me know, and I will give you every legislator's phone number and which bills, and I put out stuff weekly on what bills we want them to address.
Terrific. Mick, thank you for filling in. Thank you for being a stand-in tonight for Judge Michelle. You're not as pretty as she is, but
I was going to say, looking at the website, my picture wasn't there, and good thing it wasn't.
Well, you're a good co-host. Thanks. And Jennifer, hang in there. Let us know what you need. You and Jerry are doing a terrific job. We're so proud of you. And we know that Jerry is going to be reunited with his kids very soon. We're going to keep our fingers crossed. We're going to pray for that. We're sending good thoughts your way.
You're wonderful. Thank you so much, Jill, and I really appreciate all this opportunity.
All right. Happy All right. Parental Alienation Awareness Day to everybody out there. Everybody, blow bubbles at noon tomorrow, and we'll see you next time. This is Family Matters. I'm Jill Ajizi. Thanks to Mick and Jennifer for being here, and thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.